Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Caster, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. Today's special guest is Philip Sutter. Hello, Philip.
Hello.
All right, so Philip is with us today. He covers Lincoln University as well as state government and a variety of other topics, but today we're going to be talking about Lincoln University. So last week, Lincoln announced it had declared financial exigency due to conditions presented or amplified by the novel coronavirus. So Philip, what does financial exigency really mean?
Well, before it's defined in the university's contract with its faculty union, which I'll get to in a second. And I should also preface all of what I'm going to say with that I'm wearing a bandana as a mask at the moment. So if anyone's listening to this and I seem a little muffled, that's why. But from financial and kind of college coverage and other publications, financial exigency is basically similar to bankruptcy. It's a pretty extreme measure of last resort is kind of how it comes across in those publications. Now, in terms of LU's own contract with its union, it's defined as a projected deficit in the university's operating budget, which, quote, is of such magnitude that reduction in faculty is necessary, end quote.
So, and they painted the picture there also of this was the first step to basically bring the union in to talk about the problems as well as the potential solutions, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So how imminent is this financial crisis that Lincoln is finding itself in?
Well, Lincoln has not really released any specific numbers of how deep a potential hole it's facing. And to be fair, there are still a lot of unknowns at this point. We don't know how much more federal aid the school may get or the state may get that it could pass down. They have enrollment projections for the summer and fall, which do show declines at this time. But we still don't know, you know, how that ultimately will shape out. And both of those things, state appropriations and tuition and fees from enrollment, make up the majority of LU's revenue, I mean, the vast majority. So I mean, they're taking hits on multiple fronts, but the question is how big those hits will ultimately be.
Okay, so let's go a little bit deeper into their financial picture. So pre-COVID-19, LU officials and alumni would readily tell you that the university was underfunded due to the state's underfunding of the institution as an 1890s land grant institution. So kind of explain what all that means.
Land grant funding, there are certain campuses in this country that are designated as land grant institutions. LU is one of them, and I believe Mizzou is the other in the state, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's an 1850s institution where Lincoln's in 1890s.
Mm-hmm. And as part of that program, the federal government gives the school so much money, but in order to receive it, the state has to match that appropriation. And if the state doesn't, then the school has to return that equivalent sum of federal money.
And in full disclosure for Lincoln, one of their points of contention has been the 1850 land grant institutions, Mizzou, for instance, that's part of the core funding. It's just built into the formula for the funding for Mizzou. With Lincoln, it has to be approved by the legislature every year, and it's not in the core funding element. So it's a much bigger challenge for them to get, quote, fully funded to, and by that to be able to get all of the federal dollars that they are entitled to receive.
And I have the most recent audit of LU in front of me. It's from the 2018 and 19 financial years. And the audit does show that land grant match funding has increased, but LU will definitely tell you it's still not what they need it to be. And on top of that, core state appropriations are significantly down from what they were basically at the start of the Great Recession a decade ago. So I don't think higher education has ever fully recovered from the Great Recession, and now they're taking this extra hit on top of that.
Right. And as you mentioned, state funding as well as tuition are the big drivers of revenue for Lincoln. When you talk about tuition or enrollment, it's been declining. Mm-hmm. What was the high point?
2012 was the last high point. They've gone from 3,388 students in 2012, and again, this is from the audit, It was down to about 2,436 students last fall. So they've basically lost almost a third of their students in 7 or 8 years.
Okay, so all that to say, they weren't on the best of financial foundations, and then COVID strikes. So the state, faced with vastly insufficient revenue estimates coming forward, lays out a balanced budget that largely targets higher ed. So what did LU stand to lose as part of those first round of budget cuts?
The state withheld $180 million from various departments. This was announced back in, I think, the beginning of April. And a lot of that was targeted to colleges and universities, of which LU has had frozen about $1.4 million, which at the time LU called devastating. And out of that, they've had to freeze both hiring and spending, which means the president's office, President Gerald Woolfolk, she basically has to approve any expenses at this point.
So $1.4 million, I believe you said?
Yes.
Okay, so they have that. Now, they have received some federal help in that they received, as an HBCU, they received some funding, correct?
Yes, so through the CARES Act, they actually received about three different sets of funding. The first was $1.3 million for emergency grants to students, which I believe as of last week, they were still working out the kind of the guidelines for doing that. Then a further $1.3 million for refunding room and board charges that the university refunded to students because they're not using their housing. And then being an HBCU, the university also received $3.4 million. And we've been told that could be used to fill lost revenue. It could help with expenses related to the university switching to remote classes online. It can be used for staff training, for payroll, things like that.
Okay. So in addition to all of these issues so far, I mean, the State House just recently passed a budget with kind of a maybe a worst case scenario if they don't receive federal funding to help with some of these elements. There's the possibility of even deeper cuts to higher ed?
10% across the board for higher ed.
Okay, so if it was devastating at $1.4 million back in mid-April, now we're at full crisis mode here, which goes to the whole point of the university seeking the financial exigency, talking with the union. So
I would, so again, LU hasn't given us specific numbers of what exactly the scenarios they're looking at, but I think we can assume that at least a couple scenarios are: one, the losses they face from lost revenue, tuition and fees, that ends up being bigger than any aid they'd receive from the federal government. And on top of that, they might also face further restrictions in spending from the state.
So on top of all of this, then, as Lincoln looks forward to the fall semester, they're forecasting enrollment declines.
As of last week, and this is based on where these numbers were last year in terms of students who said they were going to enroll, for the summer, this coming summer, they're looking at a 42% decline, and for fall, they're looking at 25%.
Okay, so my perception is the 25% is the bigger number because there are more potential revenue there. On top of that, they would also, they haven't really decided yet if they're going to be having in-person classes on campus yet.
Actually, in the letter that President Woolfolk sent to the faculty union informing them of financial exigency, she said she did not expect, or it's very possible that classes will be remote still in the fall.
Okay.
So again, that's another uncertainty at this point for most colleges and universities. But actually, having said that, today as we're speaking, the California State University System announced that they've canceled most in-person classes for the fall. So I think that's an example. The first one I think I know of where a major university system has announced, you know, they're going to stay remote for the fall. So
yeah.
We'll have to see how that develops.
Do you have a sense of what effect having in-person classes in the fall versus having remote teaching would have on enrollment? Would it?
Well, that's another big question because on the one hand, things should basically be equal. You know, students who are enrolled are still enrolled students. They're still paying their tuition fees, but they wouldn't be paying room and board, I would presume. And frankly, if I'm a student or a family paying for my student to go to college, am I going to pay for the same? Well, it's an experience they wouldn't be getting, frankly.
Right.
It's not going to be the same college experience if they're doing it remotely. So I don't know. This all also hinges on individual economic situations for individual families as well.
And right.
LDU does have a large at-risk population to begin with, you know, among the students.
Well, my perception is that LU pre-COVID really wasn't set up for that much remote learning. They didn't have online classes, as some universities are increasingly adding that to their plate of options there. This is sort of a new game for Lincoln.
Uh-huh. As it is for most schools, frankly.
But. Right. But by the same token, again, if you're talking about at-risk student population, there's an element there of how easy would it be to have remote sites where those students would stay connected. And part of the element of a university, one of the things Lincoln has really focused on, Woolfolk specifically, has been building that campus connection there, you know, from the summer school programs where they're basically helping to cement a relationship with new students.
Which had to be canceled this year because of the pandemic.
Exactly. But it highlights that need that this campus at least needs to have that connection, that person-to-person connection, because it already suffered from a fairly high dropout rate, mm-hmm. quite honestly.
And a very low graduation rate.
So it's a huge challenge that obviously the university is going to be facing. So
and the longer they stay remote, the more that's exacerbated.
Right. So what do you believe are Lincoln's next steps going forward with this?
Well, now that the university has informed the faculty union that they're considering cuts to staff, the union has the opportunity to make suggestions, recommendations about alternatives to that. Those may include unpaid leave, reassignments, making teachers non-teachers, early retirement with compensation. So there are a variety of options out there that could be pursued. And again, how this all ultimately shakes out depends on what the revenue situation actually ends up looking like. But
your story in Sunday's newspaper mentioned, though, that they're not at this point looking at cutting programs or anything such as that, correct?
Woolfolk said that, yes.
Right. So what's the mood on campus?
Woolfolk is confident the university will get through this, as are the other, you know, higher up members of her administration. And actually, I would have to look more into this, but from our own reporting, from Bob Watson, our former higher education reporter, LDU has been in this situation before, I think back in the 1980s, and obviously they got through financial exigency then. This time around, at least I would say they're more likely to receive federal aid if it comes to that. At least for now, Congress is in that mood to be generous, basically. The state, they've proposed cuts to higher ed, but they are trying to avoid them. So at least for now, I think they're a good position on that front. Authorities with budgetary power over these systems are in a mood to try to help these systems if they can. On campus, in some sense, it's hard to say because campus was closed to basically all but essential staff. So most people just aren't around at the moment. They're working remotely. I'm sure the faculty union and the faculty senate, you know, they're concerned, obviously. Giving Woolfolk the benefit of the doubt, assuming the university does get through this, I think the question is for how many people, you know, right. are able to come through this. So given that things are so literally remote at the moment with online classes and, you know, not many staff being on campus, please, anyone, if you're welcome to email me with your experiences, just where you are, you know, what your concerns are, what you're looking forward to. I mean, this transition is going to continue, obviously, for months and months, whatever happens. I think President Woolfolk told me last week that she's expecting higher education will be permanently changed by this whole experience. So my email is philip@newstribune.com. It's philip@newstribune.com, and newstribune is one word.
And that just raises an interesting question. So I'm curious, what do you, or what did Dr. Woolfolk, paint as the picture for post-pandemic higher education? What does that mean?
I don't know that anyone knows the answer to that question at the moment. And whenever there is post-pandemic, that may be a year from now, maybe 2 years from now.
Right.
It all depends on when a vaccine is available. Assuming, and again, this is full of assumptions too, but if until there is a vaccine, there will probably be waves of infection, surges, and hopefully they're not very drastic, but I think we can assume they'll come and go. Now, that could mean, say you bring students back, maybe they need to go home again mid-semester, and then maybe come back in the spring. Is that feasible to do? I don't know. Maybe that just means they stay remote through the remainder of this crisis, but...
Yeah. I mean, I just, as you're talking, I'm sitting there thinking about my own college experience, which was a couple years ago, Philip, just FYI. You know, and I lived in a dorm, you know, and college campuses are very tight communities. There's not physical spacing.
There's communal bathrooms. There's communal dining halls. I mean, there's no avoiding it. It's just a communal space.
Exactly. And so it is rather overwhelming when you start thinking about that. You know, and whether, and again, when this pandemic is gone, there's a vaccine, but it's still that same issue there, that it's there, it's an environment that can easily become compromised. And it's kind of unsettling to be thinking of that.
And I mean, frankly, that's been the case for a long time. I'm not talking about Lincoln specifically, but in colleges generally, there have been meningitis outbreaks, there have been
sure.
norovirus outbreaks, but obviously nothing quite as serious as the pandemic that we're facing now. But those issues are perennial, basically.
Right, right. All right. Well, Philip, that was a lovely uplifting end of this podcast here. We do appreciate the reporting you have been doing on Lincoln, and we do covet any suggestions folks have about Lincoln. Great things that are going on there, challenges that Lincoln faces, and thank you for joining us on this issue of NT on Tap.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.